Welcome to In the Hive, a show about the issues and ideas that tie Utah together. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the program, we're discarding the old adage that you shouldn't talk about religion or politics in polite company. In fact, we'll be talking about the intersection of the two here in Utah. The impetus for this discussion: some comments by former Salt Lake City Mayor Rocky Anderson about the current mayor's race. On Facebook, the former mayor said, quote, "Now we're threatened with the prospect of a Mormon mayor, Luz Escamilla, who seems willing to do the bidding of the church, the developers, and the bank where she has been employed," unquote. There was a backlash to those comments. Salt Lake Tribune columnist Michelle Quist called it lowbrow religious bigotry. And both of the candidates, Luz Escamilla and her opponent, Aaron Mendenhall, denounced the comments as well. The former mayor countered in an op-ed in the Tribune that his words were being taken out of context and that this was about the power structure in the state because he sees the church acting as a special interest. With all that as a backdrop, we're going to dig into the history of the religious and political divisions that have come to define Utah with veteran political reporter Rod Decker. He's the author of a new book, a deep dive into those divisions. It's called Utah Politics, The Elephant in the Room. Rod Decker, thank you very much for being here on In the Hive.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Former Salt Lake City Mayor Rocky Anderson made that statement that I read in the introduction. His choice of words brought a backlash. For the purposes of our conversation, Rod, I'm not going to ask you who is right and who is wrong, or to define bigotry for us. Instead, I want to take a step back and focus on the context and the history relative to the role that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has played in Utah politics, and especially here in Salt Lake City, and how Salt Lake City has been this kind of weird anomaly or an island apart in Utah. Utah politics are heavily Latter-day Saint. Salt Lake City politics, maybe they aren't, Rod, is that correct?
Yes, Salt Lake, evidently. I've looked and I cannot find anything very definitive about the Latter-day Saint percentage in Salt Lake City.
Right.
Latter-day Saints are a majority in Utah, and politically they're a big majority because they get out to vote and non-Mormons don't get out to vote so much. Utah has the most religiously divided electorate of any state. In Utah, if you take presidential elections starting in 1976 through the last one, Latter-day Saints in Utah voted 73% Republican. In many surveys, they are the most Republican group in America, not in all. Non-Mormons voted 57% Democratic. If no Mormons were allowed to vote in Utah, if only non-Mormons voted, Barack Obama would have beaten Mitt Romney hands down in Utah. Al Gore would have had his best state in Utah. Hillary Clinton would have won Utah, and Utah would have been the fifth most Democratic state. Utahns divide by religion politically. Where the state is majority LDS, Latter-day Saint, Utah's Republican. Where the city is majority non-Mormon, the city is Democratic.
That really does speak to the polarization in the state of Utah, the fact that it does break down along those religious lines. But that's not to say that there aren't, Latter-day Saint Democrats.
There are certainly Latter-day Saint Democrats. Point to Luz Escamilla. She is a Latter-day Saint, and she is a Democrat. I covered her when she was at the legislature, and I was still a working man, and she seemed like a Democrat.
Right.
I think... For the most part, she would, if elected, act as a Democrat.
Actually, let's go back again to some more context from the sort of the past history. You know, having a mayor in Salt Lake City who is a member of the predominant faith, that hasn't happened for a while now. When's the last time that Salt Lake City elected a Mormon mayor?
Ted Wilson, as you told me, as you primed me before the show, he left in 1985, and he was a Latter-day Saint, a faithful member. He is less faithful now. In fact, maybe inactive in their term now. But he was Latter-day Saint. Before that, Jake Garn was mayor, and Jake Garn's a strong active Latter-day Saint, and there was a mixed tradition, some Latter-day Saints, some non-Latter-day Saints.
But for the past however many, 85 to now, we haven't seen...
That's 30, 35 years, something like that, 34.
What accounts for that? I mean, is there just that
in
division?
In my view, exactly what accounts for that is there's a majority of non-Mormons in Salt Lake City. Non-Mormons feel oppressed by a Mormon Republican juggernaut. Latter-day Saints control much of the state. They certainly control the legislature. They control almost all of the congressional delegation and the statewide elected officials. They enact their policies. Non-Mormons react. If you're a Catholic in Utah, you're about 15% more likely to vote Democratic than the average Catholic in America. The same is true of nuns, that is, not women in habits, but people of no religion. They are called nuns in the polling biz. And they also vote significantly more Democratic in Utah. Every religion except Latter-day Saints votes Democratic in Utah for the most part. But Latter-day Saints are the majority. They turn out and they just crush everybody.
And as a result, those who are not Latter-day Saint become more Democrat, more of the Democratic
yes.
Party than they would be were they in some other state.
Yes, it's a double minority. Latter-day Saints are in America rather the way non-Mormons are in Utah. Latter-day Saints feel oppressed as a minority, though they don't say it very often. But the reason, it wasn't always so.
Right.
For 80 years, Utah was just normal. Latter-day Saints divided between Democrats and Republicans. 1976 is the year it changed, and that was the election after Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade made an American sexual revolution political. The American sexual revolution, especially in the 60s, but beginning after World War II, Americans changed their sexual ways and their families. Changed a lot, an astonishing change. Frank Furstenberg, a family sociologist, says our families changed more in the last half of the 20th century than at any other time in history. Not only American families, European families, most developed nations, more than ever in history. Changed more and they changed faster. And people had sex outside marriage and all sorts of stuff like that.
And children outside of marriage?
Sexual intercourse began in 1963, which was rather late for me. Between the end of the Chatterley ban and the Beatles' first LP. Up till then, there'd only been a sort of bargaining, a wrangle for a ring, a shame that started at 16 and spread to everything. Suddenly the quarrel sank. Everyone felt the same. Every life became a brilliant breaking of the bank, a quite unlosable game. So life was never better than in 1963, though just too late for me. Between the end of the Chatterley ban and the Beatles' first LP. Philip Larkin, Annis Mirabilis.
Rod Decker, you're a man of many talents. but just quickly, the polarization in Utah, I mean, the sexual revolution is what restarts, because there was polarization historically. Your book goes into this. If you go, you know, back in time to the post-territorial period here in Utah.
To the territorial period.
Yeah, to the territorial
period.
Yeah.
In the territory, Utahns were polygamous. Latter-day Saints were polygamous.
Right.
And that offended Americans. And so they threw them in jail. They took the vote away from women. Honey, we're going to liberate you, but first we're going to take away your vote. They seized church property, and the church changed. After the church changed, then for 80 years, from statehood in 1896 to 1976, Utah was ordinary. Now it's hard to politically ordinary. That's hard even to comprehend now in some ways. But 20 presidential elections, Utah voted for the winner, voted with American majorities in 17 of them. Only three states voted for the winner more often. Utah had strong two-party competition, sometimes the strongest in America. It was a normal state.
And the sexual revolution changes all of that. This is an obvious question, I suppose, but why?
Well, Latter-day Saints believe in the old sexual morality, the old pro-traditional family. A traditional family is a married man and woman and their children. They believe in the traditional families and in the morality that supported traditional families. So as traditional families declined in America with the new morality, Latter-day Saint leaders preached increasingly the old family and the old family, the traditional family and the old family morality. They in 95 they issued a proclamation on the family saying that it was fundamental to their faith, to individual happiness, to society, and they still follow that. And so they oppose abortion, they oppose same-sex marriage. They think it would be nice if mothers stayed home. And they stay with the old ways. And here in Utah, abortion, pornography, censoring cable TV, birth control for teens without provided by government without telling their parents, same-sex marriage, on all of those, Utahns fought, argued, the Latter-day Saint position won, either in the legislature or in a referendum. Not the partial exception was cable TV,
sure.
But the Latter-day Saint position won. And then, after the democratic process had made one decision, federal courts came along and threw it out and said, no, you guys lose. Their history is on something that's very important to them. They've had an unbroken string of losses, or an almost unbroken string of losses.
Well, and this is, again, Rod Decker speaking, and his book is called The Elephant in the Room, Utah Politics, The Elephant in the Room, looking at the history of sort of that societal breach. I mean, you do talk about the sexual revolution and its impact on all of this, but that sets up an entirely different conversation that I don't know if we have time for, but the beginnings of that federal judge, you know, federal judges coming in and making decisions that are antagonizing to the will of the overwhelming populace of the state of Utah, and the fight with the federal government.
Yes, and that Utah fights the federal government. Utah politics. If you listen to most legislators, it's hard for them to put two sentences together without attacking the federal government, and they really don't like the federal government. On federal land, we are the most contentious state. On morals, we are. Probably, I don't know quite how to measure it, but probably the most contentious state. Now, I want to talk about Rocky Anderson.
Right,
here.
We're straying away from the local picture, from the Salt Lake City mayor's race.
Mayor Anderson, what he says is he points to something which seems to me to be a fact of Utah politics. That is that Utah politics divide along religious lines, and Salt Lake City is the non-Mormon Democratic bastion of the state. And he says, look, we've got to defend our home turf. Now, he says something that I don't really believe, that a Latter-day Saint mayor is likely to do the will of the church. I don't think any mayor will get along with the church, a Latter-day Saint mayor or a non-Latter-day Saint mayor. The thing that I have heard Mayor Anderson complain most about is the Main Street Plaza. He thought that was a terrible giving into the church.
Well, a lot of people don't know what this is, people especially who have moved here or who weren't, you know, go ahead.
A block of Main Street between South Temple and North Temple was sold to the church for $8.5 million about, and they turned it into a plaza so that they've got two connected blocks, Temple Square and their administrative block, and it's a campus. Now, the mayor sees that as a terrible betrayal, Mayor Anderson sees that as a betrayal. I think it improved the town. In any case, it was done by Mayor Dede Corradini, who was a non-Mormon. So it isn't like, and Luz Escamilla has voted Democratic, that is, in some cases, contrary to the church, in the legislature, a difference in the church. So I don't think he's right that a vote for a Latter-day Saint is a vote for special interests.
I'm just going to mention that the candidates, you know, both Aaron Mendenhall and Luz Escamilla say, look at our records, look at our votes, at who we are. Mendenhall, in an interview with the Deseret News, talked about this being, you know, Rocky Anderson's comments on Facebook being kind of a form of what she referred to as identity politics. that she wanted to get away from. Luz Escamilla, again, as you said, a Democrat, points out that while her faith is a big part of her cultural identity, she has a progressive track record on voting on things like alcohol policy or medical cannabis, women's reproductive rights, and so on.
Both historically, since the division, since the Latter-day Saints and non-Mormons split in the territory, then they went together for 80 years, then they split again, roughly speaking. Mm-hmm. Since that second split, both sides have denied that there's the religious element whenever they could. When you had a referendum on censoring cable TV or on same-sex marriage, as we had, both sides said religion has nothing to do with this. This isn't religious. But in fact, it turned out a majority of Latter-day Saints were on one side, and the majority of non-Mormons were on the other, and that was true with all of those public morality issues that the Latter-day Saints won in the legislature, then lost in the court. And it's true here. There is a religious element. It doesn't mean we have to be angry and mean and ugly with each other, but there is, in fact, a religious element, and both sides deny it, partly because if Ms. Mendenhall, if she said, yes, this is about religion, she'd lose some Mormon votes. If Escamilla said, this is about religion, she'd lose some non-Mormon votes. They both want all the votes they can get, no matter what the religion of the voter.
Right. It's a political calculus, but also we have to take them at face value, Rod. I mean, we have to.
I'm not saying that they aren't sincere. Politicians manage to be sincere in ways that serve their interests.
That is a great bumper sticker. When you look at not just the sort of candidates, but at the voters themselves, are they considering this? How important it is to voters? Are they paying close attention to whether or not a candidate is a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? And, you know, you've spent a long time covering politics.
Some voters vote one way and some another. I don't think I've ever met a person in Utah who says, I will never vote for a Mormon no matter what. I've never met a person who says, I will never vote in a race. If there is a Latter-day Saint running, I will always vote for the Latter-day Saint against a non-Mormon. I've never met such a person. But it turns out that Latter-day Saints tend to think one way politically and non-Mormons another. Moreover, I think Mayor Anderson's comment, there's elements of truth to what he says, as I've said, but I think it was not well politically calculated. I think saying we must not elect a Latter-day Saint is likely to turn out Latter-day Saints voting. Well, we'll show him.
Yeah.
I note that a candidate for governor, Spencer Cox, took a shot at Rocky, and he took a shot at Rocky. I suspect that was before he took the shot. He did it on media. Before he did it, I suspect he thought things through and decided that setting himself up against Rocky would at least not hurt. I would guess it would help him statewide in his race for governor. I am against Rocky Anderson's anti-Latter-day Saintism, he's saying. So I don't know that it was calculated, but there will be, I am sure, some voters who agree with Mayor Anderson, say electing a Latter-day Saint mayor is a bad idea for Salt Lake City. There will be others who say, we'll show Rocky, we're coming out and voting for Luz.
I'm going to stray again away from the Salt Lake City mayor's race, and we'll circle back to it in just a minute. But sticking with the overall context of religion and politics, you know, how is it that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints exerts influence here? In what ways does it do that? I mean, is it overt? Is it covert? What are the methods?
Okay.
And you've got both politicians and voters to talk about there.
There are two separate polls, national surveys, which ask people, how much politics do you hear at your church? And the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Latter-day Saints said they hear the least politics of any religion in any of those surveys. So the church says, we don't talk politics. And if you survey the membership, they say, that's right, we don't hear politics. Nonetheless, Latter-day Saints are overwhelmingly Republican. And now this isn't because, I think, of a secret messaging. I think this is because Latter-day Saints, surveys show, they believe in the traditional family ideal. They believe in the morality that supports the old morality, that supports that. And they vote that belief. That colors their beliefs about, they believe that it's good if states have more freedom, because in which case Utah would enact a more moral society. They believe it's good if the free market, partly because some people believe the free market is good and partly because it reduces the power of the federal government if you have a free market. They believe in that and they vote that. The non-Mormons see this overwhelming Latter-day Saint Republican thing that just wins and governs and rolls over them, and they say democracy forever.
Is this a big issue in this particular race? I mean, will voters come down? I'm asking for your analysis as someone who's covered politics for a long time. Will they break down on Mormon versus non-Mormon lines, as you've described in your book, happening?
Yes. They always do, and they will in this. That was true before the thing started, and it'll be true after it ends. And the question is, who'll turn out, and to what extent? Will Latter-day Saints vote Escamilla because she's especially now that it's inserted into the race? And to what extent will non-Mormons vote Mendenhall, both of whom are reasonable candidates for mayor? I can't find a dime's worth of difference between them on policy. they both say much the same thing. So I think that yes, the religion will in fact be a factor, and it would have been a factor had Rocky not spoken, but it will be more of a factor now that he has inserted it overtly.
Well, and here we are having the conversation about it, further inserting it overtly. Any additional analysis you want to add here before we wrap up the show? Again, I'm speaking with Rod Decker, who is the author of Utah Politics, The Elephant in the Room. He is also a longtime political observer and reporter and author here in Salt Lake City. Any final comments, Rod?
Well, I'll repeat. If you have feelings on this, if you get out and vote, you can express your feelings, whatever they are. I would guess that of among the listeners, we have a wide variety of feelings on this issue, and we'll have a struggle, another round in November.
Rod Decker, again, is the author of Utah Politics, The Elephant in the Room. Check it out. Rod Decker, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to In the Hive here on KCPW, a listener-supported independent public radio resource. You can find podcasts of this and all of our local programs at kcpw.org. Our theme music is by Andrew Shaw. I'm Roger McDonough. Both Sides of the Aisle is coming up next.